Good morning. May it please the court. My name is John Hall. I am counsel for Iowa League of Cities. With me today are my co-counsel, Gary Cohen and Philip Roseman. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal of my time. This case addresses whether or not EPA has substantively amended, without rulemaking, three Clean Water Act regulations that establish nationwide permitting requirements: the secondary treatment rule, the bypass rule, and the water quality-based permitting rule. Now, the adoption and revision of these rules is subject to circuit court review under Section 509 of the Clean Water Act. The new permitting provisions EPA is now forcing state agencies to impose dramatically impact two things: acceptable treatment plant design and the applicable effluent limitations for those facilities.
Counsel, what's different about this particular appeal and what's progressed since the last time essentially this was before this court?
Well, Your Honor, we have a very significant set of facts. When EPA last briefed its case with this court on some similar issues, they said the rules at issue and the guidance documents that the league was challenging were the consummation of nothing. The agency was still in the midst of all of its listening sessions, that they had decided nothing on these, and they were these requirements had not yet been decided to be applicable. Since that time, because there was confusion with the league members, engineers, and the state of Iowa, we were being told, no, these were the applicable regulatory requirements. And on the other hand, EPA files a document that says, no, they're not.
You say these were applicable regulatory?
Applicable regulatory requirements. So there was a question. We didn't know. Did we have an EPA region that was just implementing something different, that something not adopted in the rules, or did we have actually headquarters implementing this requirement but not being that overt about it? That's why letters went in to ask the agency, do you in fact have a settled position on these issues? The agency's response, our position is settled. The peak flow treatment processes are prohibited bypasses. Mixing zones should not be permitted. These were the exact same issues that 12 months earlier
should
this
court...
Should
not be permitted or are not permitted?
Well, they use the term should not, but in fact, it's aren't. When the agency tells tells a state agency that you should not be permitting this, and in fact, the agency has objected to permits and has told the state of Iowa that if you don't follow these requirements set forth in these guidance documents, that I'm going to veto these permits. That's the situation where we are right now.
Has anybody actually ever made a concrete proposal that has been vetoed, or how? I mean, they say, well, this is just stuff we're thinking about.
Well, Your Honor, they said this was stuff they were just thinking about 12 months ago in the earlier case. The subsequent letters said, no, these are the settled law of the agency. These are our existing regulatory requirements. So somehow in the time frame between the original case and the refiled case, we went from these positions are the consummation of nothing, these are not the existing regulatory requirements, to these are the existing regulatory requirements. And in the intervening 12 months, of course, there wasn't any rule adoption.
Well,
so the question is...
There's a follow-up to Judge Beam's question. Maybe I'm asking the same question or maybe in a little different way. But has there been any directive to your clients to stop doing what they were doing? Some order issued that prohibited conduct which they were undertaking?
Well, Your Honor, since the statements from the agency have just come out, the position is now that the state of Iowa said, I now have my marching orders. Here are the requirements that we're being told to the existing rules. So the engineers that we have, I guess the way to put it is, the Iowa communities, about 90 or 100 of them, are under administrative order to design.
Well, I'm not sure. Would you answer my question first, and then you can kind of explain it?
Have specific objections come out in the state of Iowa? Not yet. Objection letters have come out in other states. where the states have gone back to, because of the EPA position, have gone back to the municipalities and said, you're no longer allowed to utilize these types of treatment processes and these types of approaches.
I think maybe what we're getting at is, what's the injury in fact here? Have you pled an intent to use one of these processes that's now prohibited?
Well, some of Iowa communities already have processes that are similar to these in place, and they're being directed by the state that they have to reconsider the operation of those units in light of EPA's position. There's no formal orders from the state. They're just, since they're in the process of looking at the operations and the permits are coming up, they're saying, we now have this position from EPA. You need to relook at whether or not you can utilize this.
So these processes are actually in use, the now prohibited processes.
Yeah, and actually a specific example one, Your Honor, though it's not in Iowa, Lawrence, Kansas actually built an Actiflow facility. EPA allowed it to be permitted. The state approved the permit through several permit cycles. And then the next time around, I guess it was about two years ago, the EPA regional office said, you can no longer use that treatment process that's properly operating and meeting permit limits. So the fact that Kansas got that order, that directive to it, and that's EPA Region 7, Iowa is an EPA Region 7, that's what led the Iowa League of Cities and the Iowa Water Pollution Control Association to ask the question back to headquarters, is this just an EPA regional position that's being mandated, or is this a official headquarters position?
Well, has anybody in Iowa, for instance, been operating, say, a mixing zone, as I understand that's used?
Oh, certainly you are.
And now is told by the state, because of this regripping from the EPA, that they may not continue to do that?
Yes, Your Honor. There's been a series of communities in Iowa that had mixing zones for bacteria. One of them was Ottumwa. There was a series of them. And because of the agency position, the state has gone back and said mixing zones are no longer going to be allowable.
And it's going to cost you some money to do something different?
Well over $1 billion just on the mixing zone issue alone. If you think about it, Your Honor, bacteria are natural. They occur all over the planet. And when it rains, bacteria runs off. I mean, whether or not you're walking, there are dogs and cats in a city, or farm animals, or just wild animals, bacteria is everywhere. When somebody says you need to meet a bacteria standard, end of pipe, no mixing, and, you know, when it's raining, usually there's more water in the stream, so there's more mixing. That is virtually an impossible task. That's going to require these communities to implement dramatic changes on stormwater, on combined sewer overflows, and their wastewater plants, by the way, who now have all their mixing zones eliminated. So, yes, the cost impact is quite substantial.
What do you do with that bacteria-laden water when it rains through the hog lots of Iowa and so forth?
Well, the hog lots are supposed to be covered by a different rule.
It's a
CAFO rule, combined. That's an animal feedlot operation, consolidated feedlot operation, and they're not supposed to have runoff at a certain, unless there's a certain extreme storm. For the
Let's just say through the deer pasture.
Yeah, what do you do with that? What you would have to do from an engineering perspective, you would have to physically capture that water, chlorinate it with a disinfectant to kill the bacteria, then put something in the water to take the chlorine back out, because the chlorine is highly toxic, by the way, which is why it gets used, and then you would discharge that water. So if you could imagine what we're going to have as a result of this no mixing zone prohibition, is huge holding basins all throughout cities capturing every drop of stormwater that comes running when it rains, chlorination in the middle of neighborhoods. This is not a good situation. This is why the Iowa League is particularly upset about this directive.
This you didn't have to do until this series of communications came down the pike. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, and that was independently verified by Iowa DNR, the affidavit that they supplied in support of this action. They said, although they had heard from the regional office in the past that the region wanted some of these approaches implemented, they said this is the first time we have ever seen a letter from headquarters saying should not permit any bacteria mixing zones, peak flow treatment processes, even active flow. These are a bypass, period.
Counselor, it sounds like the things that you're describing are certainly important and serious, but perhaps a bit premature. Wouldn't you have the opportunity to bring an action once you receive cease and desist orders or some order from the EPA to actually change what's being done, and at that point obtain some kind of status quo injunction to maintain the ability to continue your operation until the matter's resolved?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, that's basically a ripeness question as I would understand it, but let me, the way the Clean Water Act works is the state program, the permitting program is delegated to the state agencies in 46 of 50 states. So EPA doesn't issue these orders.
Well, have you received an order from the state of Iowa?
Well, the state has already issued orders for these communities to take action on some of these peak wet weather flow discharge situations and to improve their collection systems, their sewer systems. The solutions that we're allowed to use under, well, I'll say, let's go before and after. Before this EPA letter came out that said peak flow treatment processes are illegal bypasses and they're not to be used if they're non-biological. Before that letter came out, communities had a number of cost-effective ways to treat these peak flows much less expensively. Now that this letter has come out, you cannot design or operate a plant to have that solution. So some people were working on a solution. Other people had some peak flow types of processes already in place. So if we were to defer, if you will, to the time of permitting, and this has been an issue, by the way, that's been addressed in a number of cases, like Appalachian Power, don't defer to permitting. Even this court's case in Sierra Club, and it was a NEPA case, said if you've got an immediate action that's causing an impact with regard to due process, change of a rule, for example, you don't necessarily look for other things down the line. You can address that right now. But to directly answer your question, if we waited to the time of permitting, all of the injury that we are suffering, we would suffer because we have to design the facilities in advance of permitting. And I can assure you that there is no engineering firm that's going to go into its client and say, I'm going to design you a process that EPA just told me is illegal. Because by when they get to the end of the design approval phase, which occurs before permitting, that process has to be determined if it's acceptable.
Has the state of Iowa taken any position on the effect of the letters from the EPA?
Yes, they said they've been told that their permits will be vetoed if they don't follow these EPA positions. And the interest of the state, of course, is to get its permits out. So that's a
Is that part of this record?
Yeah, oh, it certainly is, Your Honor. And that's if you read the DNR affidavit from Chuck Correll, who was the head of the Water Quality Bureau that reviews these issues and has them implemented, he has said, yes, EPA has threatened us with veto. We raised that issue in our brief. EPA nowhere denied that it was threatening these states with veto if they don't follow these new prohibitions. So if one were to wait for the time of permitting, if you will, the damage will already have been done.
So what you're saying is that if you had to come and contest a veto, you would have expended a considerable amount of money getting up to that point based upon their present position, is it?
That's correct, Your Honor. And I would point out that the Clean Water Act specifically did not intend these kind of issues to go to a permit by permit. It's certainly not a state by state. These are state issued permits. So if the state issues the permit with EPA's threatened approach in it, because they're the state and they need to follow the federal government because it's a federal program, we will end up having 46 different states reviewing what is supposed to be a single circuit court review of a nationwide rule, and not even reviewing it in federal court.
Don't you also have a time limit under Section 509 if you're going to bring it under?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, if Section 509 has a provision that says you have to mount these challenges within 120 days of finding out if there's an agency approval or promulgation of a different regulatory, of a new regulatory requirements that falls under the section, we would be waiving our right.
509 also talks about effluent limitations, though.
Yes.
Are these processes or are these effluent limitations, or do both count?
Well, it's a little bit of both, and I realize I'm almost into my 5 minutes, but let me answer that, because that's a very important question. First off, with regard to the secondary treatment rule, EPA changed where the effluent limitation applies. They now say, instead of applying at the end of the treatment plant, the secondary treatment limit applies to the individual treatment process inside the plant. That's not even allowed under the Act. Number two, with regard to back...
When you finish that, you say it's clear in the regulations, and I can't find where that's clear.
The term effluent limitation. The term effluent limitation means it applies only at the end of the pipe. It doesn't apply within the facility. And,
but does the regulation say that?
The regulation says it's an effluent limitation.
Okay, but as opposed to where it applies, does the regulation make that clear?
Oh, that's my definition under the Clean Water Act. I believe it's Section 502 of the Act, I believe, has the definition sections. It describes where effluent limitations apply. And the agency, I mean, there's also been a number of cases on that exact point as to whether
your brief cites 40 CFR 133, and I couldn't see where it made that point clear about where exactly it's to be measured.
Well, I guess, Your Honor, that was one of those points. I've been dealing with the Clean Water Act for so many years that when somebody says effluent limitation, it's, you know, under the definition of the Act, it applies at the end of the treatment plant. It doesn't apply internally. But bacteria mixing zones, if you can't have a bacteria mixing zone, that changes the calculation of your permit limitation that you'll get from something that could be high to something that's very stringent. And last but not least, a prohibition. It's the 509 covers effluent limitations and other limitations. A prohibition on what you can build at your plant would be an other limitation. I would point out that the bypass rule was litigated on this exact issue in 1987, where EPA said, no, this rule does not in any way dictate how you can design a plant. And by the way, the agency admitted in many documents before then it had no authority to even dictate plant design. So, you know, here we are almost 25 years later with a letter from the Assistant Administrator of Water, if you will, saying the exact opposite of what the D.C. Circuit ruled on to allow the bypass rule to go into effect. With that, I'd like to reserve whatever remaining time I have.
Thank you, Mr. Hall.
Thank you.
Mr. Katz?
May it please the Court. I'd like to briefly address why EPA's letters are before the Court today and then turn immediately to some of your questions about jurisdiction. As the Court is well aware, in 2010, the Iowa League of Cities petitioned this Court for review of another EPA letter to Senator Grassley responding to questions from Iowa cities involving these same three regulations. Shortly thereafter, the Court dismissed that case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction and then denied the League's petition for rehearing. Shortly thereafter, the League's members again sent Senator Grassley a letter asking him to relay to the agency questions about these same stormwater regulations, and the agency did precisely what it was asked to do, respond by letter. The League now asks this Court to vacate EPA's letters. There are several reasons why we believe that the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction to consider this case, only two of which I'd like to focus on today, the two that you focused on your questions. First, the letters are not final agency action in the Bennett versus Spear sense. Second, even if the letters were final, they would not be reviewable in this court in particular because they were not promulgated by EPA and because they do not constitute an effluent limitation or an other limitation, as that statutory phrase is used in Section 509B1A, which is codified at 33 U.S.C. 1369B1A.
Do you dispute that the states are treating the statements of the EPA as directives and orders and implementing directives to municipalities consistent with what EPA has stated?
I have no reason to believe that the states are treating these as orders. I have no reason to believe that the states are treating these as directives.
What about the affidavit?
The affidavit that Mr. Hall signed at Appendix 181 was signed by, it says, the former chief up until June 2001 of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. I don't know how he is interpreting that, but even if he said that these were marching orders by the state, and even if EPA had directed them, and I can tell you for sure that it is not EPA's national policy to treat these letters to Senator Grassley as themselves changing the law or as themselves binding regulations. But even if the state interpreted it that way, the league would still have an opportunity for judicial review, as you pointed out, either when the state makes an actual permit decision or if EPA actually objects.
But after 120 days, they'll lose their ability to go under Section 509, won't they?
That's assuming that this court believes that these letters themselves are final agency action. To us, the problem with this case, the primary flaw with this case, flows from the league's misidentification of EPA's letters to Senator Grassley as themselves constituting final agency action.
Why didn't you just say to Senator Grassley, these are some things that we're thinking about, and they're not really binding on anybody yet, but part of them we asked to be promulgated in a rule, and it got kicked in the creek in the past. But you didn't do that. The stuff that's in the briefs looks pretty official. I mean, if I were a city contemplating spending the taxpayers' money on design and so forth, I'd certainly like to have some language that says that these are not really binding until we put them in a regulation. Why didn't you say that when Senator Grassley asked you for some advice for these people?
Your Honor, we did. We said it. I could point you directly to page 205 of the appendix and 200. At 205, we informed Senator Grassley that these issues are currently being contemplated by EPA, that on June 1st...
Contemplated, and then you got pretty definitive right after.
Oh, I don't think we got definitive, Your Honor. We expressed our view in response to specific questions posed by a United States senator.
I think this is bureaucratic double talk, frankly.
In what sense, Your Honor?
Well, because you could have been more explicit all the way along. I mean, these people are spending a ton of money to try to figure out what they can do, apparently, and I can't imagine they're so silly that they don't understand that nothing is binding here, and we had a series of examples by counsel of what they were required to do and their design procedures and so forth, and you come up and say, well, none of this is just what we're thinking about.
Well, if I could provide some concrete examples, maybe I could put that into context for you, sir. First, I'd like to show to you why, in our view, these letters mark the consummation of nothing. First, EPA wrote that these very issues are at the heart of ongoing regulatory proceedings. Specifically, the regulatory proceedings notice was published in the Federal Register June 1st, 2010, saying We are contemplating modifying these regulations to address many of these questions. We admit there is some regulatory confusion out there, which is why EPA has a regulatory process and why it's convened a regulatory process and why, among others, EPA invited a delegate from the Iowa League of Cities to present to it on the best path forward on many of these issues. EPA is actively considering these. With respect to Actiflow in particular, that's among the issues being, quote, actively considered by the agency. When Senator Grassley in his follow-up letter further pressed the agency to be a bit more definitive on that, it did respond that the data that EPA has reviewed to date indicates that Actiflow does not constitute secondary treatment, but that it would continue to explore the issue. That might sound like regulatory mumbo-jumbo to you, but let me tell you what has happened since that time. EPA has continued to explore the issue. It's my understanding that the Actiflow company itself has recently introduced a modified treatment unit, that the Actiflow company itself has introduced its modified treatment units into three cities in the United States. It's my understanding that EPA has received the data from those modified treatment units and reviewed it. And it's my understanding that EPA has concluded that use of those modified Actiflow units may well satisfy the secondary treatment regulations. May well satisfy. From the documents that it has reviewed to date, suggests that it may well satisfy it. In addition to not marking the consummation of EPA's decision-making process, no rights, obligations, or legal consequences flow from these letters. The League seems to believe that the letters are binding in two senses. First, that they're facially binding, and second, that they're binding in practice. I'd like to address both of those briefly. The League first alleges that the letters declare in, quote, unequivocal terms that bacteria mixing zones are prohibited in certain areas and that use of the product Actiflow constitutes an illegal bypass that states may not authorize. The letters make no such unequivocal statements. With respect to mixing zones, a mixing zone is a portion of a water body where water quality standards that are otherwise applicable to the water body as a whole may be exceeded. With respect to mixing zones, EPA was asked for its view of whether states should permit sewage treatment facilities to use bacteria mixing zones in waters that the state has designated for people to swim in. EPA responded that, in its view, it would not be appropriate for states to issue permits that allow mixing zones in these circumstances because allowing people to mix where facilities are discharging sewage could pose a human health risk.
It says should not be permitted, right?
It said should not be permitted.
That's pretty definitive despite all the hedging language prior to that.
Yeah, even if EPA believes in its informed view that it should not be permitted, EPA was also clear and 40 CFR 131.13 expressly delegates to the states the authority to impose mixing zone policies as they see fit. If the state of Iowa wishes...
Isn't that a big change?
Is what a big change?
Should not be permitted versus we're going to leave it to the states.
Well, EPA was asked for its view as to whether states should permit these, and EPA expressed its view that states should not permit these.
And if the states did, then EPA would do nothing. If they did permit these things that you say should not be permitted, then EPA would just stand by and shrug your shoulders as to their acts. Is that
EPA
right?
Has the authority to stand by and shrug its shoulders.
Yeah,
EPA has the authority to review these.
To veto.
EPA has the authority to approve or disapprove a state water quality standard. And the state of Iowa, it seems that they have the League has a gripe with because the state of Iowa has interpreted these as if EPA would in the future veto any water quality standard that does not allow bacteria mixing zones with raw sewage to be permitted where people swim.
Seems like a pretty reasonable assumption when it says should not be permitted.
Your Honor, if I may, the Iowa League of Cities expressly requested EPA's interpretation and EPA responded, but there's no change of course here, and I'll tell you why. In 1994, EPA published its Water Quality Standards Handbook. In that Water Quality Standards Handbook, EPA expressed, this is nearly, well, 1994, a while back, it expressed its view that it would not be appropriate, that was the word it used, same word as in the letters, it would not be appropriate for states to apply mixing zone policies in areas that could cause a substantial endangerment to human health. Then in 2008...
But wait a minute. The handbook also says we leave it to the state's discretion, right?
Oh, sure, as does the regulation and as did EPA's letter to Senator Grassley.
Okay. Now, go on.
In 2000...
Tell me why should not be permitted doesn't conflict with that.
I don't believe that should not be permitted. It does not say must. It does not declare. It does not. It says nothing beyond should. Should states permit it? No. And second, this is not the first time that was stated. Should not. The word should not were used in the same. Were used by EPA November 2008. The head of its Office of Science and Technology, Ephraim King, wrote a memo on the same very issue. The Iowa League of Cities petitioned for review of that particular memo in this court, and this court held that it lacked jurisdiction to review that memo.
Well, that was then, and this is now. But now this, going back, this should not be permitted, you're saying, should be read, well, spend your money and take your chances with us.
No, Your Honor, that's not how we're interpreting it. And to the extent that EPA articulated a view on the appropriateness of the use of bacteria mixing zones, to the extent that it did in 1994, it did in 2008, and it did again to Senator Grassley. Every time the agency articulates a view in response to an unsolicited request for its opinion about the regulatory schemes that it is under its purview, this court should not come and find itself reviewing those documents under the auspices of them constituting new regulations. These letters are not regulations, Your Honor. Section 509B1E is quite clear what this court has authority to review, and these do not fall within the ambit.
Our prior case, there was no published opinion, was there? It was just an administrative panel matter?
It was a three-judge panel of this court, yes, Your Honor.
But no opinion?
There was no opinion.
You're not contending that we're bound by that, are you?
I'm not contending that the court is bound by it. I'm simply contending that this letter seems like a way to get a second bite at the apple. They went back to the same senator, asked the same senator if he would resend questions to EPA about the same issues that were before this court the last go-around. And when this court determined that it lacked subject matter jurisdiction, which is what the unpublished order said, it said, we lack subject matter jurisdiction to consider this appeal.
So your answer to my question to opposing counsel would be nothing's changed since the last.
Absolutely case. Nothing has changed, Your Honor. The league cites no case, and the government is aware of no case, in the 40-year history of the Clean Water Act where a court of appeals has exercised subject matter jurisdiction under Section 509B1E under the theory that letters of this nature constitute promulgated limitations. I'd like to address why I think that that's a pretty good...
Maybe it just means that after 40 years has gone by, the EPA has exercised its muscle without promulgating regulations as is contemplated. And you're all government agencies, and you're all spending taxpayer money. And maybe we thought that you'd all be able to get your heads together and figure something out, left to your own devices, and that apparently hasn't happened. And so now it's time to take a look at what's going on.
What has happened, again, in June of 2010, the agency convened a regulatory proceeding to address these very issues. So it has happened, Your Honor.
And you're saying that process is ongoing?
That process is ongoing.
Reach a conclusion.
I'm sorry?
It has reached no conclusion.
It has reached no conclusion, Your Honor. First, the letters were not...
Should this process go on without reaching a conclusion with these people faced with continuing problems and floods, and people can't swim in polluted water, but sometimes you can keep them from getting in polluted water until things return to normal and things like that. I don't understand why this has become such a problem for you government agencies to figure out something that's fair all around.
Well, again, the regulatory process, Your Honor, was prompted in part by our recognition that the regulatory community does face some confusion on these issues. And as I said, notice was published in the Federal Register in 2010 convening those proceedings. The Iowa League of Cities has representatives participating in those proceedings. And as I said, with respect to ActiFlow in particular, during these proceedings and during the stakeholder meetings that have followed, EPA has concluded that the use of ActiFlow in its modified format may well satisfy the secondary treatment regulations. I'd like to briefly address why these letters were not promulgated by EPA. Promulgation occurs when an agency issues a document with legal effect. The Seventh Circuit, Judge Easterbrook, the D.C. Circuit, then Judge Scalia, said that the best indicia of whether a document has legal effect is whether it's published in the Federal Register. These letters were not published in the Federal Register. I can assure you that EPA has no intention of submitting them to the Code of Federal Regulations for codification. EPA did not characterize these letters as regulations. EPA did not intend for its letters to create new law. And EPA stands here before you today admitting that its letters can never be violated. Finally, and most important,
admitting that its letters can never be violated.
Its letters can never be violated. They're oratory in nature. They express EPA's view in response to a question.
I see. That's what you're saying.
Hold on.
That sort of negates the practical effect of those letters, though. If the state effectively says we're not going to permit that, where are we?
Well, it seems that we're here with a problem for the state of Iowa, not the United States Environmental Protection Agency. That's the way that the state of Iowa has interpreted the letters, not EPA.
And it's sort of like you're saying to these cities that they're willing to disregard the best interest of their cities, and you folks know how to keep that from happening. Is that so with this... these responses to Senator Grassley?
Your Honor, we're saying that when a member of Congress writes the assistant administrator of an agency, that the agency has a duty to respond, and it's good government. And if I may, agencies...
But wait a minute. Why couldn't it just respond? This matter is currently under consideration and is going to be published and put out for comment.
The first response to Senator Grassley's letter was much more, shall we say... definitive than the second. And I don't mean to say that the views expressed in the second letter were definitive, but that is the reason why Senator Grassley sent a follow-up letter. We want more specifics. Tell us where you are today. And that's what EPA did. It said where it is today in the second letter. In addition to not being promulgated, Your Honor, Senator Grassley's letters certainly do not contain effluent limitations or other limitations under one of the four sections listed in Section 509B1A. To qualify as an effluent limitation in particular, the Supreme Court in EPA versus California said that it must impose direct restrictions on the quantities, rates, and concentrations of materials being discharged into federal jurisdictional waters. I've read the briefs. I'm sure you have as well, and nowhere has the League identified a single direct restriction on the quantities, rates, or concentration of effluent that its members may discharge into federal jurisdictional waters.
What about no mixing zones in recreational waters? Doesn't that regulate the effluent? Isn't that an effluent limitation?
It may constitute. If EPA had said no mixing zones... That may constitute a limitation of sorts, but I don't think that it's a direct restriction on the quantities, rates, and concentrations of effluent that may be discharged into federal jurisdictional waters. But that does raise a good point. What's an other limitation? An other limitation isn't just anything. An other limitation must have bite. An other limitation must require something of the League's members. It must impose on the League or the state of Iowa an enforceable obligation. The League has failed to identify a new enforceable obligation imposed on its members by these letters. Agencies issue letters and opinions setting forth their views all the time, and often in cases such as this, in response to unsolicited inquiries from members of Congress and regulated parties. This case involves a challenge to two such letters. Communication outside of the formal administrative process benefits the regulated community and enables congressional oversight of administrative agencies. But the effectiveness of this sort of communication and agencies' ability to timely respond to these sort of requests would be substantially reduced if they were forced to convene a notice and comment rulemaking every time they're asked for their regulatory interpretation.
Mr. Katz, your time's expired.
Lest their opinions be subject to judicial review.
Thank you, counsel. Would you advise Mr. Hall how much time he has remaining for rebuttal?
2 minutes, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Katz. Excuse me, Mr. Hall.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address a couple quick points. Number one, with regard to the question that Judge Gerdu asked me earlier, there's a provision 40 CFR 122.45H, which describes that the point of discharge for effluent limitations is the final point of discharge, unless it's infeasible to measure it at that location. Secondly, the story you just heard is quite a story on bacteria mixing zones. The documentation that we received only after we filed a Freedom of Information Act request to get the agency to release the documents confirms that the agency knew precisely that it was setting up a new prohibition for bacteria mixing zones. The documents state that that given our history of deference, and I'm at appendix page 359, a deference to states on mixing zones, if EPA now wants to deny mixing zones in certain circumstances, it may be most appropriate to do so via changes in regulation. That's EPA's own people, one region, writing back to headquarters saying, I realize you want to deny mixing zones. You want to do that. It should be by rule. This, by the way, it was not the Iowa League who raised this issue on mixing zones. It was EPA Region 7 who said they wanted to deny mixing zones for bacteria. They started an internal process, got information from the entire country as to who was allowing mixing zones, every EPA region, and then came up with the policy, the King Memorandum, to deny mixing zones. Now, last time EPA argued this issue to the court, they told you the King Memorandum was merely a memorandum from one office directed to another. It meant nothing. And since that time, we've got a letter from headquarters that says the King Memorandum sets forth the requirements for bacteria mixing zones. It's the memorandum that says they're too dangerous to allow. So we certainly have a changed position. With regard to case law, I mean, the case law is really clear on this point. You cannot do a substantive amendment of an existing legislative rule by rule interpretation. It doesn't matter whether it's by a letter or by a news release or, you know, how it's done. You look at the existing regulation, you look at the regulatory history, you look at how the implementation of that regulation went on for 20 or 30 years. And if there's a substantive difference between what you're told now and what was said then, they have changed the rule. And that's the governing case law in every circuit that reviews this type of issue.
Thank you, Mr. Hall.
Thank you.
The court wishes to thank both counsel for your presence, your argument, and the briefing in the case. Consider it submitted. We'll render a decision in due course. Thank you.